Hi, my name is John.
And my name's Chris.
And this is Stay on Target.
Hey everybody, welcome to Stay on Target. We are your hosts,
John
and Chris.
You can check us out online at stayontargetpodcast.com. A little bit later, we're actually going to do a review of The Hobbit.
The Hobbit!
The Desolation of Smaug!
Smaug.
Smaug. We've got special guests as well to chat about that.
Yes. It's going to be a lot of fun.
But first,
T-minus 10 minutes and counting.
Welcome to our new segment, Operation Countdown. Where we attempt to scrupulously cover a selected topic in precisely 10 minutes. This week's topic is last-gen games on
next-gen.
All right, so this week, or actually over the weekend, it was announced at the VGX Awards that Tomb Raider, the definitive edition, would be coming out.
So is this just a port? I mean, I imagine it's just a port to next-gen?
They've rebuilt it, apparently. They've done new character models, like brand new textures and things like that.
For someone like me who hasn't played the game yet, I feel like this is going to be something that I'll probably pick up just because I want to play it on next-gen. And because there's not that many games out for next-gen yet, I feel like we're probably going to have a lot of people that buy it.
I agree. Well, like, what this is doing is basically like taking the place of a Game of the Year edition. You know, like, before, a year after basically a game comes out, you release it with all its DLC for another $60 price tag. And
does this have all the DLC? It does,
doesn't
it?
DLC, which I don't really care about because there's no single player DLC. It's all like multiplayer DLC, and who cares about multiplayer with Tomb Raider? But that's another issue with people shoehorning multiplayer into single player experiences.
Was it shoehorned? I feel like it probably was.
It was shoehorned, yeah, for sure. We can talk about that on another Operation Countdown in the future.
This
is the thing. Like, I think that we're going to be seeing a lot of this over the next year just because you'll have Game of the Year editions that people are going to want to release anyway, and people who haven't necessarily played these games over the past year. I'm thinking like we'll probably see this done with BioShock Infinite after all the DLC comes out.
I mean, that'll be beautiful as well on next-gen consoles.
And that's the one that actually I would rebuy and play again probably. Right, that was a great experience. And then I could see this happening with GTA 5.
Yes, I can see
for
that
sure.
Too. Well, it's definitely that's a huge world, and arguably that was the most next gen game on current gen consoles.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Last gen,
and that's the argument against it happening is just the fact that it's already kind of next gen. But that's another thing.
Then again, it's like I want to play games on my Xbox One. I don't necessarily want to buy new full on games at full price for my 360.
Well, this is the thing. Even, you know, so say Tomb Raider on 360 is sitting there for $20, and for an extra $40, I can play them on my Xbox One.
I'll buy it on Xbox One for sure.
Right.
For sure. And also, okay, this is also an opportunity for people who were basically pushing the very limits of what the 360 could do.
Right.
And basically, it would free it up and put it to the next level to where maybe performance would be better. Those engines are probably going to run a little bit better on Xbox One and PlayStation 4s.
Right.
I definitely think that this is going to be a solid thing. I mean, are we going to see this with any, other games? Like, do we have?
Well, like, this is, I guess, if we're going to talk about, if this is worth it, and, you think about just the games that are out now, like Battlefield 4,
Ghosts.
Call of Duty, Ghosts, those are basically the same thing. Like, those came out on last gen before they came out on next gen.
And arguably, and so I would say that more Battlefield is more of a next gen game that came out for current gen, whereas Ghosts was like a current gen game that came out for next gen.
Correct.
I definitely think that, you're going to see those big jumps of, like, if people have to release them on multi-platforms or they're releasing them for 360s, they're going to be like majorly downgraded.
Right. In the future, everything's going to, like, we're talking about Titanfall.
Dude, you know, how is that even going to be released for 360?
Don't even know.
How are they even going to do
that? So
it's
the reverse of this. And, and I think that, we've already seen basically that's what happened with these games. And I'm okay with it happening to a lot of games that came out over the past year. Maybe not a lot, but,
the ones that I haven't played yet, I would be okay with. And especially, like, that cost, it doesn't cost nearly as much to do that as it costs, like, to port it or to, like, rework it, however they would need to get a handful of developers to do that, as opposed to, like, having, a whole new game from scratch or, like, a sequel. But we are talking, there is a Tomb Raider sequel in the works for next
gen. And it's going
gen.
to be next gen. And yes. And so,
is that next gen or are we in current gen? I mean, like, the next gen is technically now.
Right. That's another issue for another operation countdown. Maybe we talk about that later.
Okay.
But, you know, like, we look at the release games for the consoles. You know, the only exclusives that were really out there that weren't already on current gen, there was Killzone for PS4, Killzone Knack, and Resogun for PS4. And then, you know, Xbox One, you had Rise, Forza, Killer Instinct, a couple of Kinect games, Fighter Within, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, we don't have a lot of those exclusive experiences coming up soon. Like, we have, you know, Titanfall coming in, but that's still coming to current gen. But yeah, Titanfall coming. We have Destiny later in the year. We have...
And that's coming to current gen as well.
Right.
And I mean, I don't know how these games... Like, I seriously don't know how those games are going to be. But it's like, you're right. We don't have that many current gen or next gen games that are like kind of exclusive to that. But again, we're talking about the reverse side of that, where it's like they're going to be downgrading those games for current gen. Because I feel like they're going to be... Maybe, do you think they'll shoot for like the lowest common denominator, though?
No.
You don't think they will?
No, I think that 360 is going to be a severely downgraded experience. Gotcha.
I mean, is that like size of maps?
PS3,
or is that like texture packs? I mean, like how is that going
to
work?
Well, whenever you talk about Titanfall, you know, Titanfall is supposed to be a persistent online experience. And how are they going to make that applicable to people who are not going to be online at all? Like, there are some people who don't have their 360s online. How are they going to play that game? I don't know.
Think they're going to.
I think that you...
There's a lot of people that don't have their Xbox Ones. Like, that was a big fuss people put up, and PS4s as well. It's like, I feel like... Well, I guess Titanfall's not coming to PS4. Never mind.
Destiny.
But Destiny, yeah. But Destiny, on the other hand, is. And I think that you can play Destiny single player. I think they've said that you can, but it's not as good. Like, it's just not the experience that they were wanting.
So what are some experiences that you would want to see, some games from last gen that you would want to see on next gen?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. Well, I mean, obviously Infinite would be the very first one to come to mind. So what's come out this last year?
We're talking, like, you know, I guess Sony could bring out possibly The Last of Us on current gen. I could see them, you know, maybe bringing out some Uncharted.
Yeah.
Like, maybe all three Uncharted games before the fourth one happens.
Yeah.
Something like that. You know, that would be...
Some Uncharted would be really nice.
Yeah. And for people who, you know, there's people, I'm sure, who...
Halo 4. Okay, let's just go ahead and just say it.
Yeah.
Halo 4 as well. Like, I feel like that could come out for next gen. And I would love to play through that game again with a stronger engine,
right?
Because I definitely think that the 360 kind of maxed out the engine on that one,
right?
Like, textures would change and things as you zoomed in and stuff like that. I mean, there was a few things that were about that one that felt like they were really pushing the limits and they really wanted it to be next gen,
right?
But it wasn't time yet.
I think we may see another version of The Walking Dead from Telltale, but I don't actually, like, that's not something that I would need to bring to my Xbox One.
You know, and
unless I could bring my save file from the 360 to Xbox One, I'm going to continue with my current save file, because I mean, I have hours invested in the story of choices I've made. I don't want to have to, like,
make... You don't have to make them again.
I don't want to end up with a different narrative necessarily.
That's true.
I've already invested a lot of time into this.
Well, it's also like, if you go into a game that's like, has permanent changes, like, or permanent decisions that you make, it's like you want them to remain permanent throughout.
I could see maybe Arkham Origins ending up on
I would
on
play that.
Next gen.
For sure I would play that.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's kind of one of those... I was surprised that one wasn't a dual release anyway, like a multi-platform anyway. It just kind of, it weirded me out that it wasn't. However, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that one being that way. However, if we're talking like arcade games as well,
yeah,
I could see, like, I would play The Cave. I mean, there's lots of arcade games that I would play on next gen.
And that's kind of like what Sony's been doing. Like, that's their approach, is they're taking a lot of their arcade-ish kind of indie games and porting those from, you know, they're taking them from PS3 to Vita, and then from there to PS4, and so, like, they're just kind of like, everything that's been on their platform in the past year, they're taking to PS4. Microsoft has not been doing that. You know, like, the only game that they've been doing that with, or have said they're going to do that with, is Halo Spartan Assault, which is that mobile game, twin stick shooter that they're taking to Xbox One. Why that needs to be on Xbox One, I don't really know.
Who knows?
I'm not going to play it, probably.
I don't really. Is it free?
No, it's going to be $15.
Well, in that case, there's no reason for me to do it.
Exactly.
It's, you know, it's like if they were giving it away for free, like Killer Instinct. Killer Instinct is a game that I wouldn't play other than because it's free.
Right.
Okay, I mean, so as far as that goes, the fact that, like, if we transfer a bunch of the arcade games, I would for sure buy all of those, because I'm struggling to find games that a relative low cost of entry that I want for next gen.
Right.
Because we've got these games that are big ticket items that are out right now, and it's like, well, you know, there's only a handful of those even.
Right.
Like, it's like there's only like 10, but if we start porting things like with arcade games, then I feel like maybe I would buy a bunch more of those. So.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think this is a good thing for right now. I don't see this continuing on past this year, honestly, because, you know, like, once we get out of this year, you know, these games that we'd be porting over would be, like, over a year old.
Right.
And I don't see that happening. But, you know, I'm okay with it happening for games that maybe we've missed over the past year or we really loved and would run better on the Xbox One.
Especially something like Arkham Origins, where it literally came out right before the next generation of consoles started. And so something like that, and then as well as like Bioshock Infinite, I would for sure pick those up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes out of the next year and maybe playing some experiences that I missed.
For sure, man, for sure.
All right, so I think we did pretty well. We covered that pretty well.
We covered it pretty in depth there. I don't know if I was lacking for anything there at all. So
yeah, we'll see. We'll see if we keep it 10 minutes.
Yeah, we might shorten it down so that way we're kind of
a little more pressed for time,
fighting the clock, that sort of thing. I think that's kind of.
I feel like we were talking pretty fast though.
I feel like at the beginning especially, because we were like, it was like way less time than we maybe thought was. It was, or maybe it was more time than we thought it was. So
yeah.
I think if we especially if we have guests, it might run up right up next to the clock.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so we've come to the main part of our show.
The main event.
So we've just seen The Hobbit. We've got. Oh, well, hang on, wait a minute. For our. We need to announce our special guest.
Yes, we have a returning special guest. It's the epic return of Jared. Everybody, welcome Jared to the show. Welcome back.
And better than ever.
He's wearing a cape.
He's improved.
With a Twitter.
he does have a Twitter.
What is your Twitter?
JPinions. @JPinions.
And so this is these are things that are your opinion, but they're better than that, right?
They are in fact JPinions or whatever, which is a little bit more superior, a little bit more sophisticated. You know, it's a little bit more something you want to hear. A lot of people give you your opinions and you're like, I don't care, dude. But JPinions, you
care
check
about.
This
I mean,
stuff
just
out.
Instantly, you just care about them
for sure. You might even like them better than your opinions.
That's true. I mean, I know you have a lot
your
of
your opinions
you,
might become okay, JPinions.
That's true. That's and then that's the retweet.
What
you know?
Happens? What happens if they take one of your opinions as their own? Does it become their opinion? Or
I like
is it
what
still...
John. I like what John's saying about the retweeting.
It's like a retweet. Okay. Where it's like basically Jared's personality forces himself into your brain, yes. And it becomes your JPinion.
My goal is for people to not even be making Twitter posts anymore, but just retweeting
just
my
yours.
Posts.
I like that.
It's
yes.
great.
Whatever.
It's great.
Yours and Kanye West.
That's it. If I can be hanging with Kanye in the retweets, then I'm feeling pretty good about myself.
Yes.
Okay, guys. So we just saw the Hobbit.
The desolation
of Smaug.
Smaug. Man,
spell it out.
Smaug.
Smaug. So, okay, and I was saying before, it was like, as a kid, whenever I read The Hobbit, I always thought it was Smaug.
It is Smaug.
And
they said Smaug through half the movie.
No, they didn't.
Yes.
No.
Yes, not
it's
Frodo.
It's Smaug. Smaug.
I don't think it's Smaug, dude. It's
I think most of them were saying Smaug. Pretty sure. Anyway,
I heard Smaug.
So Smaug, I thought was thinking Smaug and Smaug were the same thing, and it's like they're completely different. But all day I've been thinking about comparisons between the two, so, you know.
They're twin brothers that were separated at birth.
And one of them is, it's very gaseous, and the other one, you know, just breathes fire all over dwarves.
Exactly.
Okay, guys, so let's just dive right in. Okay, so whenever you were going into this movie, what were you thinking? I mean, coming out of of the unexpected journey, what kind of did you like that movie? What did you expect from this one?
All right, so let's just preface this with, this will be a spoiler-free section of our review, and then we'll go spoilers later.
Yes.
So... All right, so like, okay, all right.
Spoiler free side.
Yeah, so hopefully you've seen The First Hobbit. If not, then just turn this off.
We're going to spoil so much of The First Hobbit.
Yes.
But not the second Hobbit, not this Hobbit.
Not the second Hobbit.
I mean, if you haven't seen The Unexpected Journey, you might want to pass on
and
the first
And why
part
are you
of
listening to this anyway?
That's true, you know.
Okay, so like, honestly, I came into this, I mean, the reviews were coming out of it were good, but I was coming into this with pretty low expectations, honestly. Like, you know, they... Can't do any worse, hopefully.
How many times did you see the Unexpected Journey?
I saw it twice. No. Two or three times. I can't remember.
Okay.
At least two.
Okay.
I know for sure.
Right on. And yeah. Jared, what about you coming into this? What did you kind of have and as far as expectations go?
Well, I've seen The Unexpected Journey several times. I mean,
like, you've seen it a lot. Like, you saw it, like, at least, like, 3 times in theaters, I think you were telling me, and then you've rented it a couple times.
I've probably seen it, like, 7 or 8 times.
Yeah. Should have bought it by now.
I definitely should have bought it by now. Like, at the Redbox again, I'm like, oh, I'll rent this. Check it out again.
Like, I'll give it another shot. I really should just buy it. I'm kind of in the boat with Chris, where I saw it 3 times, and and I saw it, like, I rented it last night and watched it last night, and so I was coming into this pretty fresh off of watching the first one.
Yeah,
so.
But I was definitely going in just, you know, hoping for some improvements, some more of that just Middle Earth magic. Middle Earth magic, as I would like to call it. You know, just something that would definitely take me more just into the movie experience, you know, free of distractions and just kind of, especially, you know, we saw it in the IMAX or whatever, and, you know, I just wanted to be just enthralled, you know, with the movie.
Yeah. And so I mean, I on the other hand, kind of came onto this thing where, like, I didn't, whenever I saw this in theaters initially, I saw it a couple times in theaters, saw it in the high frame rate, saw it in the, you know, saw it originally. I was like, I was looking forward to that one, and I just came out of it kind of disappointed out of the theaters. But, you know, whenever I revisited it on I guess, Blu-ray last night, it was kind of one of those things where I watched it and I actually enjoyed it a lot. I didn't expect anything from it more than what it had. You know, it's basically, to me, it's like it didn't have much of a storyline, and so I didn't expect it to.
Yeah, for sure. The first one does get better with successive viewings because you know what you're going into, and, like, you know what's coming up. Like, I mean, you just it's a better story watching it the second time.
I think a hard part about these movies is them being prequels to Lord of the Rings or whatever, and I feel like it's along the same lines of, like, even though it is that, but any movies that, like, you compare to, like, books or whatever, even though these are compared to books, but they're also compared
to movies
to this, you know, that, you know, it was like, you know, those Star Wars prequels, you know, it's just, like, so much scrutiny under them just because of what they were compared up against.
Yeah, just because of what they are.
Not that I'm defending the Star Wars prequels in any way. I'm just saying.
Let's be clear here.
I'm just making a point.
There was something wrong with
so, while watching, since I've watched Unexpected Journey several times and in watching this film tonight, you know, I kept just trying to think, you know, okay, this is a different story. This is something that I need to think about on its own.
Yeah.
You know, I want it to be in that same universe and hold that same magic, but I don't want the same story. I don't want the same, you know, characters and key points and that kind of thing. It is a completely different thing. I mean, the Hobbit story in and of itself is a misadventure.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, and they're trying to kind of tie it into a little bit more, which I like or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not really, like, something that incredibly matters.
Right. Well, it was written as a children's story and everything. And that's part of, like, what I think they did a really good job with this particular movie was increasing the amount that it mattered. You know, taking it from something that was just like essentially like a treasure hunt into something that actually, you know, that it matters in not only the dwarves' lives, but it matters in the world of Middle-earth.
Well, I think that's what they're trying to accomplish, I feel like. Yeah. Definitely. Which, like I said, I like. You know, I like them. I like them making it more of a direct tie-in to the Lord of the Rings rather than just rather than just some lopsided story out in no man's land.
Right.
Yeah. You said it best before we went into this. After you watched the first Hobbit last night, you know, like, that one basically has no plot.
No,
like,
it doesn't.
The things happen, but it's not really a good plot.
Yeah, stuff happens, but I mean, what really do you accomplish by the end of that movie?
It's got an awesome scene with Smeagol.
That's very true.
Yeah, that is the best part of the movie.
Best part of the whole movie.
And it's one of the ones that it was like, that's a key moment to the first, third of that book. That it's like, I'm really glad they got it.
But
right.
Again, like, I think it brings back to your point that part matters in the larger scheme of things more than the rest of the movie. That's what makes it good.
That's very true. Mm. And not only that, it's like they brought in something you knew, something familiar from the the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the original trilogy, and they brought that in and it. You know, with that character and things. That's why I feel like with this one, there were some characters that are from the larger, like, that you see as well. That's why I liked in the first, you know, when Galadriel was there in The Unexpected Journey. I liked those moments. Just because it's like, you can place it, you can put things in their place with the larger world. So let's talk about this one. Like, so non-spoiler stuff. How did you think this movie, The Desolation of Smaug, did?
I mean, I loved it. I thought it gave the world a little more weight.
Yeah.
It was a lot more serious.
Yeah.
I felt like, you know, what comedy there wasn't forced. It was just kind of natural. It did have more comedy than, like, Lord of the Rings, but I was okay with it. You know, like, the dwarves felt, you know, real to me. I like the inclusion of the men and
that's very and the elves and the elves and things. And
this is the first time we'd seen men in the Hobbit in right? general.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
Unless you count the bar scene.
Yeah, I mean, that's true though.
What
that's
did you think
true.
Of? Well, we can't go into that. The spoilers. Never mind. we'll do that later.
Well, the spoiler clock is ticking down.
What's a spoiler though? Like, because technically, if we discuss anything in the movie, it's a spoiler.
No, like major specific things or anything like that. Just kind of like maybe
overall themes,
and how you feel like it presented things. Like Jared, I kind of saw you like flinch a little bit. I don't know if you were in agreement with Chris on the humor thing. I mean, how did you feel like as far as the humor and the satire of this one goes? How did you feel like they did? Because I know that you had some strong feelings about the unexpected journey being too frivolous or something like that.
For sure. I agree with Chris on the things that he said to some extent or whatever. It did have much more of a darker tone. I did buy into more of the humor, maybe not all of it. I thought that some of it was definitely over the top.
Yeah.
I will say I definitely buy into, I think that Bilbo's humor is perfect.
Oh, yes.
Throughout the entire spot thing. It doesn't take me out of the moment at all. It's very just spot on. You know, he's just like this kind of awkward, goofy little hobbit who really shouldn't even be there or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, his humor was always very, very tasteful or whatever. Right. I still feel like some of the dwarves was a little forced or whatever. And by extension of all this, I would just say that I definitely don't like just some of like the unrealism things. You know, I don't feel like there was a whole lot of unrealism in the original trilogy or whatever as far as, you know, fight sequences or
kind of like the slapstick stuff, that sort of thing.
Not even slapstick stuff, just like, you know, people falling these great distances and not getting hurt, or, you know, some scenes without spoiling anything, you know, kind of got a little bit out of hand where it was just like, okay, we're just a little bit over the top. We're a little bit too invincible now or whatever, where it's just not tangible enough to where, you know, you believe that it could be a real place at that point. And at that point, it becomes just a movie.
That's true.
To me, and not, you know, something that could be real.
I could see some of that. But to me, it's like, again, and also the way the unexpected journey, whenever I watched it this last time, it sets up some of those things in that he presents it to, because this is essentially a story, he's writing this story, and that's how we end up, you know, back here. And so he presents it as, you know, some things that I've told you are untrue, or some things, you know, that I, and so it's like some of this, you know, if you view it as like Bilbo,
okay,
he's writing his story.
Okay.
And so if you view this as something that like he's writing, maybe he's embellishing things, maybe, you know, that sort of thing. So if you view it that way, some of the comical side of things could work more. And so I'm not saying that, you know, people should view it that way. I'm not saying that that's the way it is. It's just like, if you look at it from that side of things, though.
The story side of things, like how beyond comedy, like how did you feel like they did with that?
I feel like we're drinking a whole lot more in the Hobbit prequels.
In the movie theater?
We are dealing with dwarves. And, I mean, dwarves do drink a lot.
There was drinking in the first, but I feel like every character is holding like a glass of wine or brandy or, you know, mug of ale, you know, at some point in the film.
Lord of the Rings, they were in caves a lot.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, and they're like literally at like in the middle of like war trenches.
Because I mean, there were
stuff,
those scenes
so.
Where they were partying, you know, drinking and that kind of stuff. You know, after
there was the drinking contest
like
between Legolas and
the extended version.
Okay, we kind of went off like. That wasn't a major plot point, though. Drinking was not a major point of the plot.
I'm sorry. It was just very, very much on my mind that I needed to share.
Just need to get that J-pinion out there.
Yes.
It's been burning a hole in me.
Okay, so as far as the story goes, though, I think they presented it very well. Something I mentioned, I've thought about, you know, it's like on the first film, they did all this exposition, they set it up, and I said, as long as they start knocking those dominoes down that we set up, I feel like it would, it was going to be great. And I feel like storyline wise, they started doing that. Like, it definitely felt like we were making progress. We were getting somewhere on this
one. I agree.
And the pace actually vamped up near the end, you know, for the second half of this film, the pace vamped up.
I agree, but I do think it drug.
Yeah,
I agree.
But I do think, I mean, again, we're turning 300 pages into three hour movies.
So. Yeah.
The first one drug, this one kind of drug at some points. I mean, part of it was because it was late, I'm sure, whatever, but I was like starting to doze off.
Well, actually, one of the guys we went with, Dave, mentioned that he said, make sure this is on the podcast because he knew we were coming back to do it. He said, what's interesting to me is like that I went into this and, it's a 300 page book that they were making into they had no rights to make it into like 3 hour movie, hour movies. It's like, that's just so much. And he said that after the first one, it felt like it was slow. He's like, but after this one, he's like, I'm looking at this thing. I'm thinking, hey, I could do with another couple hours.
Yeah.
But it's like, but I mean, I don't necessarily feel that way, but it's like, I could see how somebody could compare this to the first one. And I mean, the pace was way faster than the first one.
Right.
And so it's like, I feel like I'm with you where there's so many things that we could just cut out where it's like, just, you know, that were just pacing issues here and there.
It's like, I feel like you could have easily done, you know, either 3 2-hour movies or 2 3-hour movies.
Right. Yeah. I think that might have been a better thing, but the break would have been odd because stories are usually told
this break wasn't odd. I mean, you know, this is even more of a
cliffhanger.
Just a classic cliffhanger.
Yeah,
you know?
A classic cliffhanger. So, which I'm okay with. I'm not saying that was actually, I'm okay with that. Like, I actually like these kinds of stories. I liked The Hunger Games, The Catching Fire. I like Empire Strikes Back. I like Two Towers the best out of those first three films.
I do as well.
And,
I agree.
You know, I honestly think it's because we don't spend any time setting anything up. Character or
for sure. The middle film, there's so much potential just to run with it.
You know, in a trilogy, I mean, if you look at a regular film and compare that to like a trilogy of films, the middle act of any film is usually probably the most exciting one. So technically, if you view it as one big story, that middle film would be the one that most people would gravitate towards, you know,
is obviously set up as one big story.
Yeah, exactly. And so like in that vein, I mean, I love the where they got to with the storyline. I love the character development that I feel like everybody did a great job. How'd you guys feel? There's another thing that people, you know, have talked about a lot about The Hobbit and things, the visual effects. How do you like, I mean, cause it's starkly different than what the Lord of the Rings was.
I still do not like the CG orcs. They look terrible whenever they're running, like doing things, like from far away.
Is that what they are? Are they 100% CG?
Like, they're not 100% CG.
Close-ups are not 100% CG, but the far away shots are.
Because they were zero CG in The Lord of the Rings, if I'm correct, right?
No. They did CG like the armies Helm's and stuff Deep.
Like that. Well, for like
that,
some of them, but I'm talking about just like the orcs in general. Correct, like, they were just people in makeup, right? You know, like correct. In a Walking Dead style.
Correct. Right. And I'm kind of like with you where I was like that after the first. I mean, whenever I went back and revisited, it wasn't so odd to me because, again, I knew what to expect. It's a very stylized look at Middle Earth as opposed to something that was gritty and real.
Like, I understand that, but they still look like the far away shots, CG shots, still look out of place and they don't look good.
I definitely would say that. The far away shots, I think, are worse than the close-ups.
And there was a bunch of stuff in like the there were things I loved about the river scene. Like there's a river scene.
Spoiler there, Chris.
It doesn't matter.
There is a river in Middle Earth. No, beware if you see this movie.
Yeah, I was about to say, literally all they do is go, hey, there's a river over there. You see that river? We're going over there.
Like, I loved parts of it. Like, I loved the shots that they're using, like, obviously using the GoPro to go underwater. And, like,
that was really cool.
But then there's also shots where it's, like, just completely CG with, like, dwarf axes and big logs collapsing and stuff
that's
like that.
That's kind of
like,
what I was talking about. I feel like things, you know, got out of hand, you know, at some point.
I agree with that. But it looks bad as far as visual effects.
That stuff
looks bad.
See, I'm kind of on the other side. I like how it looks visually just because, again, because this is a more fantastic story, like a fantasy-based story than The Lord of the Rings ever was. I feel like this one in particular can get away with kind of that almost cartoony type look.
I won't go any further than this, but I can agree with you that they can get away with using CG for things. They can't get away with using bad CG for things. Okay, my argument is not the CG; it is bad CG.
Gotcha.
It looks bad.
Gotcha. Okay, so
That's being said, watching it in the best possible way that we could have watched it.
Right.
You know, so like if you saw it any way bad now, imagine watching it on your 32-inch TV at home. You know?
Sometimes I think though that the watching it on the big screens or whatever can expose some of that you wouldn't necessarily see on like a smaller screen or something with something at your house. I mean, if you're really getting, I don't know, it
can go either way.
Yeah, it just depends on what it is.
Music.
Music, great. I mean, it's you know, it's Howard Stone again, and
Shore.
Howard Shore. Howard Shore. Yeah, sorry, Stone. What am I thinking? Anyway, so Howard Shore again, and it's beautiful. It's something that, like, the only, there wasn't anything like really where they didn't sing at this one. Yeah. They sang in the first one. I liked those songs. And then, but I mean, I liked the music.
Yeah. What'd you think?
I definitely thought the music was very good. I would say that, like, and I'm sure a part of it is just familiarity, but like, I don't necessarily remember any of it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I remember obviously like the classic, you know, the Hobbit theme, right. And you know, they did the far away, you know, theme, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Or whatever, but I don't really like remember a whole lot of it. I remember it fitting good with the movie at the time, you know. Right. I especially remember the at the very beginning of the movie where you had there's orcs, they're running around or whatever, and they're like on top of mountains. Spoiler. or whatever, but it's like at that very, very beginning when they announced the title of the film, Desolation of Smog, or whatever, you know, just like the music there, that part kind of did stand out to me. And part of that was probably the music combined just with the vast, the visual, amazing scenery that you're seeing.
Yeah.
But like, I remember those two things at the beginning, I was like, oh, man,
I think the one thing that I will say is that, like, I agree with both of you. Like, it's beautiful music, and I don't remember anything specific. And I guess, and like, what I was thinking, you know, as I was walking out was like, or actually in the middle part where he brings the Hobbit theme in, like, we don't have any new themes. Like, we're still basically rewriting the music.
We had Smaug's theme.
But not any like memorable themes. Like the
Smaug's theme and the theme from last film. The mountain theme.
The Lonely Mountain.
Yeah, see, I couldn't.
You didn't pick that out?
I could give you the Lonely Mountain one.
I picked that.
I love that song.
Smaug's theme.
I think that song is one of the best songs in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, yeah.
Smaug's theme was more of a kind of environmental, kind of low, like kind of a. That type of thing. To me, and this is something that I wanted to note, was the lack of music in some key scenes was very noticeable to me, because like it stood out, like some of the more intense scenes.
Yeah.
It stood out to me that it was just tense, you know, and there was no music to break that tension. So there was some really key moments that
Bilbo's
they did a great
burglarizing.
Job. Maybe.
Yes.
Just maybe. Okay, so is that, I mean, what do you guys want to, I mean, see it, don't see it? Let's give it a quick, like, maybe
short
rating.
Definitely see it. Like, anybody would want to see this.
Of course, if you're a fan of the Lord of the Rings, you know, you just
want to see it. If you don't like Lord of the Rings, I mean, don't see it.
Correct.
I mean, some people really hate the Lord of the Rings.
Well, then they
really
should not
hate
see
the
this
Hobbit,
movie.
And, like, they just can speak nothing
really?
About that.
Really? Have you met somebody that doesn't
Wow. Like, they want to stab Peter Jackson in the heart.
Hate it. I believe Kevin Smith doesn't like Lord of the Rings at all.
Oh, that's strange.
Whatever, which is interesting to me, you know, just, big movie of people walking around, you know, who cares, type attitude about it, which, you know, I can see to some extent or whatever, but...
But it's an adventure. I mean, everybody wants to go on an adventure,
for sure.
So,
I mean, anyway. I love fantasy films.
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
sure.
So I say see it as well, so that's three sees it. Oh, sees it? What am I talking about,
seize
man?
It.
I'm just...
Grab it by the
this
throat.
This is supposed to be professional.
I know, right? Okay, so that's it. The spoiler clock is winding down, though, so make sure that if you guys don't want to get spoiled on this film, we're about to unleash the spoiler on you. Like
the waterfall of
they
spoiler.
They unleash the orc, you know, from the movie.
The one orc?
Just the single
what are you saying
really
right now?
Threatening orc. Okay, so that's 3, 2, 1. Throw out a spoiler, everybody!
The Ire of Sauron returns.
Almost... kills Bilbo.
I like it. Both of those were
really
good.
My spoiler was better.
Yeah, your spoiler was
I
mean,
I love that part, by the way.
That was really good.
Why didn't they do that in Lord of the Rings and kind of explain that big ol' eye?
Gandalf and Eye of the Sauron, and even how the eye was Sauron or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, and
then,
like,
the part it was his body. It was so cool.
It was very, very
cool.
I loved the added stuff, which wasn't in the book at all, or whatever. Gandalf going to Dongledore,
like the necromancer. Well, he did go there.
He did go there, but you never heard.
But
about
you never
it.
Heard about and it. He literally just came back and was like, "I had something I had to do."
Took care of some Gandalf wizard biz.
And I actually didn't mind Radagast this time either.
He was a lot more toned down. I mean, there was like still a couple things.
Oh yeah, with the birds, I guess
for sure. But it was a lot more toned down or whatever, which I liked because I liked
the tone was more serious.
I like the character and the idea of having another wizard, Radagast, or whatever. Yeah. I just hated how he was portrayed in the first film.
I even like the idea of him being, you know, because he was always like the natural kind of guy. I even like the idea of him being a little bit like, you know, not
quirky,
necessarily all there.
But not
goofy. Yeah, but not necessarily just outright like, you know, rim shot, you know, that sort of thing, like he was in the.
They did a good job, man. I loved the fact, like, where they hooked up. You know, like, I was like, what are these like tombs or whatever?
You didn't know?
I didn't realize until he said it.
He's like, okay. ring race.
See, part of me, part of me almost thought they didn't need the whole conversation after the fact, where like, because I knew where he was going.
Yeah, see, no, they needed it because I didn't know.
Yeah,
where they
were at. Okay, that answers my question, because like I feel like there was a few moments like that where they almost explained what they just did, and it's like to a certain extent I didn't need any of it. But I mean, there was a girl, a lady and her husband next to me, and they were like, she was always like, what just happened? Why did they do that?
Well, that's, you know, just people can't pay attention.
Well, she was paying straight up attention. Like, she was like captivated by this film, but she just didn't know anything that was going. And so it's like, that answers my question.
Yeah.
That, you know, hey, there's somebody in the audience that didn't know that they were going to the tomb of the
Before we move on from the Eye of Sauron, I love the direction that they're going with Bilbo putting on that ring. Like, because by the end of the movie, he was seeing the eye.
Well, and by the end of the movie, he knew that he didn't want to put on the ring.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like he didn't like it. And that's interesting, because that's a deviation from the book, where it's like in the book it was like it was just kind of this, you know, you didn't really have that that element. Yeah. But it's like he was very. I love how they built it up to where he's torn. Whenever he has to put on the ring, he's like, I don't want to do this.
And then whenever he pulls it off,
it's like it's a rough moment for him.
I hope they continue that more in the next film, and also they kind of delved into his connection, like his this obsession with the ring a little bit more well. And I loved that.
I love, man, that was really well played and well directed. Whenever I think he realized what grip it had on him.
Yeah.
Whenever he almost lost the forest, there with the spiders. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Whenever he almost lost it, it was so good. That's probably one of my favorite moments in the entire movie.
When he just starts just with all malice and everything, killing that, you know, baby spider or whatever it was.
It wasn't a baby spider. I think it was like a crab spider coming out of the ground.
I had no clue what it was or whatever, but he went on it with full rage.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And then, you know, the line just saying, you know, mine, you know, when he grabbed the ring.
The Hobbit rage. Let's just call it the Hobbit rage.
The Hobbit rage, the Bilbo rage.
Okay, so something about Bilbo that I wanted to mention, that they, and I guess they played it up in the first one, but the reason that his humor works, whereas like Frodo, who was way more serious or whatever, is...
Frodo had no humor.
Right.
Not a very funny guy.
Very serious guy.
Well, because like, and to a certain extent, like I love the fact that that they played up on the first Hobbit film, and I didn't catch this whenever I saw it in theaters. The Took versus Baggins relationship on Bilbo, where he's, you know, this is more of his Took side, and that, you know, that brings us to like Merry and Pippin, you know, and being Took. So
I like how they didn't really deal with his like his reluctance. To do things in this story. Like, they got that out of the way in the first one.
Yeah,
for sure. Like, well, I mean, at the end of the first one, I mean, he was like, hey, I'm committed. I'm going to help you get your home back. You
know? Which is awesome, but they could have gone they could have still
could have
kind of
went back on it for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's literally the only progress I feel like that was made in the first film to a certain extent was the fact that did he belong with these guys and he chose to stay with them because he had the chance to turn back a number of times. And so it's like that would retread old territory. I'm with you. I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah, I still think he is the best actor in this entire film.
What about Cumberbatch? Voice actor.
Well, he's a voice actor. I mean, you know, there's a lot more that goes into Bilbo, you know, and and his mannerisms and just like he accurately portrays Bilbo in great way.
What do you guys think about the presence of the elves in this film and the added elves, you know, from Legolas making a return to the brand new elf, Toriel, or however you pronounce
she's
it.
She's in, like, I was trying to remember. Like,
she's a created character.
She's created?
Completely.
She's not in any of the books.
Not at all.
Well, okay, so, like, as far as Legolas goes, I honestly I forgot how much I liked Legolas, I guess, like, and how much of a BA he is.
Yeah.
Like, I love seeing that. Now, like...
I feel like it was over the top, though.
His action was over the top, especially whenever he's like bouncing across their heads.
Yeah, prior to that moment, it was totally believable for me. Where it was like, okay, well, this is a young Legolas, and he's like, he doesn't have.
But can you even call it young though? I mean, 60 years out of 6,000 that he's lived or whatever.
Right. I feel like they played his attitude to where he's a little bit more brash.
I don't think that's more to youngness though. I just think that's to just. Life circumstance and
I think there's going to be something that'll happen.
He doesn't understand the gravity of things that are happening
right
now.
Right. Sure. Because, so, I mean, if you think, you know, I feel like that's kind of the person that he was in the original Lord of the Rings when he was at the Council of Elrond.
I agree.
Or whatever, you know, where he was very much, you know, more kind of this stone-hearted, you know, kind of guy.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a vast change between that, that Legolas and the Legolas that we do on at Helm's Deep, for instance. Mm-hmm. So in those battles.
Yeah. Like, as far as, like, Toriel goes, I liked the interaction with the Wood Elves. And I think that she does a great. I mean, I actually like her character. Like, I'm just gonna lay it out there. I really like her character. Like, she does a great job with it. I love her as an actress.
What do you think, Jared? I mean, you brought up the question. Is there something you don't like about it?
I kind of felt hit and miss with her. Honestly, I felt like some.
Really,
I felt
that
like
surprises me because I really enjoyed it.
I felt like some scenes that she was in was very good. Or whatever, I felt like the love triangle or whatever they're developing was just completely stupid.
With the dwarf?
I don't know if that was a love triangle necessarily.
Oh, it absolutely is.
You think?
Yeah. Well, then, yes.
Absolutely
well,
I guess. Is.
Okay, so my thing is, I believe the attraction between her and the dwarf. I believe it. Because we got to see scenes with them where they were, like, attracted to each other.
I feel like that's all just added stuff to fill in this movie.
It is.
See, the other thing was...
Regardless of how well it was done, I couldn't help just think of, like, what's the point of this to what we're watching?
I could see that.
Like, as long as they're in the movie, though, like, I did, like, the one thing I think that love story kind of brought out was just showing a little bit of Legolas's life. You know, like, okay, well, he likes this girl, obviously, but he can't because his father is, you know, saying no. So it's kind of just
and
suppression.
In defense of even what I just said or whatever, it did add more character development to that dwarf as well.
Yeah, that's true.
And as far as the dwarves go, it's like I like anything where it helps one dwarf step out from the group because it's like as a whole, it's like you could essentially view them as like their leader and then the dwarves.
Yeah,
you
know? Like we didn't get much dwarf character development beyond Thorin, that guy, whatever his name was. Was it Keeley or Keeley?
I don't remember which one of them.
And then like who's Gimli's father? Whenever he showed Gloin. That picture, yes, that was awesome. Like,
yeah, it was great.
That was cool. You know, my wee wad, my wee lad,
my wee wad,
my wee wad, my wee lad Gimli or whatever.
Oh man,
I was upset though that Balin really didn't get as much screen time.
Yeah,
I feel like in the first one,
he brings like an element of class to the dwarves that like I just love.
I mean, he's my favorite dwarf. You know, yeah. I wish
plus he's got an epic beard.
He has a very epic beard.
His beard is great. I'm
or whatever,
just saying.
But I wish I really liked him in the first film. You know, I feel like he had a lot of good, great, insightful moments, and I feel like he kind of took more of the back burner in this. And maybe that's because it was more of an action-packed film, and you know, he definitely is kind of a more of the old wise dwarf.
But I think he had one of the best scenes in there with that interaction
with Bilbo.
Bilbo before he goes into the dragon to see the dragon.
I may have fallen asleep during that part. I don't remember.
Yes.
I told you I was like really
was
starting
really
to struggle.
Late, dude.
It was really starting to struggle during
about that part.
Yeah.
Did you see him leave? Like Bilbo like wants to turns around to say one more thing.
Yeah,
and
he has one Balin's more question.
Walking away.
You know, he's just like,
well, and he doesn't
yeah, I'll go. Totally missed that part. I saw Balin talking to Thor, not Thor, Thorin. Thorin.
Thor was in this movie, guys. Captain America shows up next time.
We are Chris crossing Hemsworth. The Middle Earth and Marvel Universe. It's going to be in Avengers 4.
Iron Man is going to be crazy. I mean, I want to see an Iron Man versus Smaug. I mean, that's I want to see this.
Sure. Man, okay, so honestly, really like Smaug as a... You got me saying it like that now.
Dude,
really, that's how it's
said.
That's
how you
Smaug.
Say it.
I refuse.
I'm sorry.
Smaug was a great character.
Dude, oh, man. He's great. I like him a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Really? Okay, see, I knew immediately
I really went in with no expectations. Not really no expectations, just no knowledge. I really didn't know how they were going to do it. Like, I knew he was going to have some lines. I didn't know that it was going to be...
I knew he was
like,
going to say something.
Like, that many... Like, it was like a lot of dialogue.
Right. Well,
because
he doesn't do that much in the book. Like,
yeah, but they took out the key lines between him and Bilbo from the book and inserted them into the movie very keenly where he says something about him being, you know, him being very proper and him like, you know, knowing what to say, that sort of thing. You know, Bilbo is very, you know, complimentary of him and
dude,
Smaug the tyrannical.
Yeah, that was my favorite one. All the rest of them were very glowing things, you know, like the spectacular
the stupendous
and then he Smaug the tyrannical.
The tyrannical.
It's like going up to Hitler and being like, "Oh man, your fearfulness, you know, like
you're so such a tyrant. Mean to everyone." Well, like, I mean, and it all related to what Smauga just said. Like, it all related to that dialogue, you know, whenever Smauga was talking about, I kill people when and where I want to kill them, and I take what I want, that sort of thing. And so the tyrannical, because that's exactly, because he was being proud of the fact that he was tyrannical.
He knows he's bad.
Right. And just to make sure, like, they didn't get the Arkenstone, right? Bilbo never, like, he was right up on it a couple times.
And am I right? Did he lie to Thorin and tell him, yes, I have it?
Well, no, I think he did, right? Hang on. Well, we can think about this then. What if he did pick it up and he did lie to Thorin and was like just not saying, because he never said
I think he said he said yes. Let's go.
I thought he said that he didn't get it.
He didn't say anything. He just said he just like that he was just looking at him and like something happened and they needed to go do something.
Thorin, they were playing this thing like where Thorin essentially. I didn't realize that. I mean, is the Arkenstone kind of a ring situation where it's like it just kind of possesses you and turns you into something you don't want to be? Well,
no, I think it was just like the love of all that. Gold,
the greed,
like,
and that's
I mean, they definitely. I feel like they talked a lot about, you know, the greed of dwarves and just how it, you know, would overcome
once it catches.
I think it's just the greed, like it's just like the desire for either power or money. You know,
yeah, I mean, I feel like Smaug talked about it. I think Gandalf said something about it at some point, and Bard
and Balin said something about it too.
Balin, that's what I'm thinking about.
Who else said that dwarves are greedy?
It was the bard. Because he said they don't care about life forms they find insignificant. Yeah. He didn't use the word life forms, though. That sounds very sci-fi and not very middle-earthy.
Man, whenever they got all messed up there in the forest... That was cool.
Oh, dude, that was great.
The spiders?
Well, yeah.
Like, where, even before when they were all like just like tripping balls.
Yes. Dude. I mean,
Bilbo,
it's like...
Bilbo like looks down at his feet and he's like walking backwards, but he's not like walking...
And he turns around and he looks at himself, you know?
Great.
That moment was great because I was wondering how they were going to play this because, I mean, they get really lost in the forest and it's like the way they played it was great with it being essentially a drug and they were just tripping out.
I loved how they showed where they didn't have to do that, but they showed where the actual path was. They're like, they're here and it's right here and they can't find it.
I know, right? And as far as like whenever the spiders, how did you guys feel like they did with the spiders?
That was freaky, dude. Like, I don't really like spiders.
I felt like it was a pretty good scene. Again, parts of that scene got a little bit unrealistic for me at some points.
See, I mean, it's kind of one of those things that with dwarves, to me, I just
like unrealistic and like it was too goofy.
Mainly just falling. Just like the falling, you know, just like, you know, like cutting down the dwarves and then falling like 30 feet, just like landing and
the web was
slowing them down. The spiders are way bigger, so they fall through it faster.
Jared's we can not tell buying you're, it.
No, he's not buying it at
he's
all.
He's got a J Pinion over there.
Yeah, but I love that. Like, I mean, it was.
It was a very good
you compare
scene.
It to Lord of the Rings with Shelob, and like she is a much like. Heftier kind of thing.
Now, is she just a normal spider, just like they were? Or like, were they different in any way?
She's a bigger spider. Like, she's one that's like been there by herself, like for a longer time.
Right.
These are like smaller. Like, they live in the wood. Spiders.
But still pretty big.
Well, they came up from the south, you know, as well. So I mean, it's like they're probably from the same descend from the same line of spiders. But you know, Shelob might be a different type of spider too. I imagine.
Right.
These could be, you know, brown recluse spiders.
And, I loved whenever he put on the ring that he could hear them talking.
I did really like that.
Whenever he took off the ring and the spider fell, he still heard her say something. Was that just because?
I think, like, honestly, like...
Residual?
I must have missed that, or I don't know.
The spider says something about...
Maybe it turned into more of a hiss whenever he pulled it off, though. I mean, finishing a word.
But even if it did say something after that...
Sting.
Yeah, there's, like, residual effects that the ring has you. Like, even in Lord of the Rings, they talk about that. Like, he's, like, worn out, and, like, and there's still some, like, just... You can still... Mm-hmm. There's this awareness of things after you pull it off a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, so I love that scene as well. I love the fact that you could hear him talk. How did you feel about... So speaking of like the antagonists here, how did you feel that the white orc did this time around?
They really... I mean, I don't know.
You really kind of passed the torch to that other giant orc.
The other white orc.
Yeah.
There's a new white orc.
There's a new white orc, and he looks even more vicious.
I did like it a lot better, for sure. Mm-hmm. I, yeah. You... you understood a little bit more, I felt like, the orc's role. I didn't really understand the orc's role.
Correct.
In the first one.
I agree
one,
with that.
Gotcha.
Whatever, and in the opening scene, which we almost spoiled earlier, I remember with Thorin and Gandalf in the bar and Bree, you know, right. talking, you know, you find out that, you know, Thorin does have this big price on his head and that kind of stuff, so there are, you know, people who are out to kill him. I feel like that wasn't made as clear in the first one.
That's true, and I also feel like, because...
And also the connection to the orcs to Sauron.
Right, right. Yeah, that's the part
right.
that like
that's
really
the part
clicked
that
it to me.
This time.
Was like, okay, well, he's the leader of Sauron's army.
Right.
Oh, I get it now.
I mean,
because that's why he's a big deal.
Exactly.
Sure.
And that's what we didn't get the first time around. And it's like the first.
And
time,
I don't know if that was an oversight or if they were trying to be ambiguous.
I don't know. It's like I think with the White Orc, what I felt like in the first film was that they're trying to recreate the urgency of leaving the Shire that they had with Lord of the Rings.
Right,
and the
ring
rates. I mean, I really feel like they were trying to recreate this chase feeling where it just didn't successfully do it for me. It's like I never felt the urgency that I had.
They honestly,
with the other one.
If they had played it up more like they played that first scene with the people all after Thorin.
Yeah.
And like that in the first movie, it would have felt better
right.
than just the orcs chasing them.
Plus, Bree
reason.
Is just kind of a creepy place anyway, and so it's like the Prancing Pony just has these... It immediately, emotionally for me anyway, once we started there,
you
it immediately...
You Aragorn over in the corner.
Right, well, I mean, immediately like made me feel a certain way.
Yeah.
And I really liked the fact that they could do that. I was telling Jared the Hobbit theme is the same thing, you know, because, I mean, it just immediately, whenever that goes, you just feel a certain way. So, I don't know, I feel like tonally it worked... It didn't, I don't know, it's like, it made the connection for me whenever he went up there to Dangledore, made me the connection between him and Sauron for me, but it's, then again, it's like, I feel like, to a certain extent, he just kind of bailed off on the whole dwarf chase thing, so
yeah.
I almost feel like we just kind of jumped ship on that one, you know?
Well, yeah.
Changed horses mid-race or
something.
I agree
with that, like, it did feel weird, but,
What
you know,
felt weird?
It just feels weird, like, he's... After the dwarves, and all of a sudden, he's not.
And all of
a
sudden, he's just like, you take care of it, man.
I didn't see it that way at all. Actually, I saw it as Sauron was like, hey, you're done with this. You're not searching you're not going for those dwarves anymore. You're here with me.
Yeah.
And he was kind of like, well, you know, and he
grumble,
like,
grumble.
Yeah, he kind of gets his right hand man,
yeah,
and he's like, hey, you're into this now. Whatever. Yeah. You got to go do this for me.
Makes sense.
Whatever.
Okay, so.
Okay, before we move on from that.
Go for that.
Yeah, like, so as long as we're talking about Dangledore, I don't know. Like, are we just gonna have a big battle at some point next movie? I guess with that whole army.
Okay,
but
so
I loved,
what? Gladriel's gonna come back in. Is what I'm.
What
assuming.
Is our army though? What's our army made of?
Elves,
Galadriel.
Maybe?
It's gonna be Galadriel.
Just Galadriel.
Galadriel and Gandalf.
Literally,
she's
just
down.
Gonna run in there and just
Gandalf
lay
is
down.
Held prisoner.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Right now,
yeah. Somebody's gotta go
no
get
eagles
him.
To bail
well,
him out
Radagast
this time.
Was supposed to be that guy, you know.
No, Radagast was
supposed
be
to go
Gladriel.
Get. Yeah, I mean, but he's gonna come back with Gladriel. So
it's
gonna be him
be like
and Gladriel.
I feel like.
Do you think Elrond's gonna come back?
I think it's an elf army. Is honestly what I think it is. And I think that's.
I think
in
it'll
one
be.
Of the
I think it'll be elves. I think we'll see a lot more dwarves. To somehow possibly
maybe okay so this
Saruman anyone
well, I think we might finally see an alliance of elves and dwarves
right we could well we could see like after he gets the arc the whatever it's called
the
Arkenstone he summons a lot more of the dwarves to him or something like that
could be
I love seeing like even more than in the Lord of the Rings I love seeing Gandalf just kick butt with his little staff there like whenever he was battling Sauron
as opposed to a sword you mean
big bubble and it goes vroom, and you're just like
oh,
sure.
Oh
yeah
that scene was dude that was one of my favorite like action sequences of the movie just because it's like the graphics there felt so good with the kind of the inky blackness just you know being forced in and out and that whole battle was very believable to me I was on the edge of my
it was
seat
very Harry Potter-ish like it reminded me of the Death Eaters and
Well, I mean,
Potter.
It was very much, you know, like a legit, just like kind of sorcery, wizard battle, you
which
know?
Is interesting because in the first Lord of the Rings, they really didn't like take it to that level. I mean, they kind of did with the Balrog a little bit.
Like, he had the
like,
Balrog,
but they really
he
didn't
had
take
fight
it to the magical
scene with
level.
Saruman and Gandalf,
but that was
whatever.
Very physical. It was a very physical battle, like where it was essentially like I'm punching you with my staff from a distance.
But
like,
I don't think,
yeah,
yeah, it was a different kind of battle though.
Right.
With Sauron, you can't do that, you know.
Yeah.
You can't punch him from a distance with your staff.
I love seeing that battle, though,
eye.
Because, you know, like, by the Lord of the Rings time, Sauron's too powerful for Gandalf or somebody to go up against with him, you know, like, one-on-one and not
it's
die,
true.
You know?
It's
which
true.
Makes me be like, why is Sauron keeping Gandalf alive? Why didn't he kill him? I mean, obviously, he can't because he has more movies to make, but...
You know, that's a good question.
I think it's
is he using them to draw people there?
I think it's kind of an irrelevant topic at this point or whatever. I think that's just something for the third.
That's true.
For the third
that's
film.
True.
We literally just don't know. I mean, as far as the ancillary characters, the men in this one, the bear dude,
the bard.
Yeah, the bard. Sorry, I couldn't remember his name. How did you feel about that? How did you feel that played? Did you like it? Did you not?
I liked it, but I we kept flashing back to it, and I felt like this. I'm like, why are we going here so much? Like,
flashing back to where?
Why? Okay, so like, there's all this interesting stuff going on with Bilbo and.
No. Or you're talking about in back to the four dwarves that stayed behind in.
I'm getting the two characters confused.
Sorry, I was talking about the bear guy.
The bear character.
Oh, the bear guy.
Is that Bard? I thought that Bard was the man.
Bard was the man.
Right.
You were talking about the bear guy. You just didn't pronounce bear right.
Is that Bjorn?
Bjorn. That's right.
Bjorn. Yes.
Bjorn. Sorry. I
loved that part.
The two B characters, the Bard and the Bjorn.
Like, I thought that part was
pretty good.
Him standing
guard like over them, that was pretty cool.
It was really cool.
Just the imagery was cool.
What was cool about it, and this is something that you couldn't do in a... If you weren't taking three films to do this, like he would be the first thing cut, to me is it because we didn't have like a Tom Bombadil in the Lord of the Rings. It's like, you just wouldn't have time to do this. But his character to me, while he didn't necessarily play like a major role in like the main events that happened, it's really nice to see them visit a character and get their support essentially, for the quest. So, I mean, I liked that aspect of it, but I mean, do you think maybe we'll see him in the final battle with the Necromancer?
I mean, I don't see. No, I hope not. I don't see.
I say
why.
The Necromancer. I should just say Sauron.
Because this guy seemed much more of a like he's out for his own interest thing. Really, like he doesn't care. He only cares about them because they came in like into his house.
And he doesn't like orcs.
Orcs. Yeah.
More. Yeah. His hatred of dwarves is trumped by his hatred of orcs.
Right.
What about the other character? What about
the Bard?
Bard.
Yeah, let's talk about
Bard
him now.
That's
what
I was
wanting to talk about.
Also, Bard, men, and just you know that town. You know, the lake town.
I like the town. I thought it was a little kind of ridiculous, but I like the fact that they're just kind of like they don't.
Yeah, just
take
the men
seriously.
Felt odd to me. I didn't really understand the town.
Yeah.
Like what it was, what the men were doing there, what their role was,
right.
What their government system.
Yeah, see that was
like,
weird.
I really didn't understand
with the manager or what was it, the mayor. I don't even know.
Yeah, see that's what I'm saying. Like I didn't really understand what was going on, and I felt like the men were a little weird or whatever. And I know they were kind of going for the kind of wayward, lost their way.
Right, they're really naive.
Eccentric.
You know, kind of we live on the middle of a lake. I mean, it's
for
like,
sure,
you know,
they're just partying drunk all the time. You know, type thing.
Well, I mean,
I mean,
the king or the mayor, whatever you know, he was,
and I guess because you know. Most of the men that we've seen are either, you know, soldiers of Rohan or soldiers of Gondor.
Right.
Or whatever. This is just
This
men.
Is just a town in the middle of nowhere, you know?
Right.
And something I kind of, like a parallel I was drawing with this, and you guys might, like, if you guys didn't get this vibe at all, maybe I can just put this aside. I was kind of getting almost a Dickinson kind of a parallel between, like, the upper rich class, like the rich dude who was the leader of this town, and then the disparity between him and the other people. And I was kind of getting this like Charles Dickens type of vibe with the town.
I mean, there's that aspect of it, but the difference between like Charles Dickens and this is Charles Dickens uses that as a social commentary.
Well, even like visually, though, I feel like it was very
very obviously because that's what we kind of associate with upper class in Victorian kind of English people,
right?
And that's kind of what it was paralleling. What I don't like about it is. Like all that really serves is to provide some kind of just like restriction on the people in the town from doing what they're doing. Like they're keeping that guy in prison so he can't go shoot down Smaug. You know, like it's really just there as a block for the heroes that are there. And that's why like
– It's like an antagonistic force that doesn't feel strong enough at all.
It's just created for that sole purpose. Yeah. That is the only purpose.
I could see that. And the other thing that I didn't understand, like I couldn't grasp this, was that Bard was supposed to be a big like advocate for the people. So why didn't the people back him up?
Yeah, no one helps him.
Like nobody backed him up whenever he was saying the dwarves are gonna kill us, you know?
Yeah, they're talking about like an uprising and all that kind of stuff, and maybe that's just talk, but like that
I just didn't buy it that he's the leader
really
he's
like
the
him.
Leader of the uprising whenever nobody supported him. Didn't seem like he had any friends.
It's the greed of men, maybe. You know, you have Thorin there talking about bringing riches to the town and
that's
that
true.
Kind of stuff.
And the naivete
you know,
of
in that
people.
World especially, I feel like we constantly just talk about how men are so corrupt and greedy.
That's true.
It makes perfect sense.
Before we move on, like that, like what I didn't like about that was, you know, like going back, like we have Bilbo and
back to it too much.
Yeah, in there with Smaug, and like that's really interesting.
Back and forth too much. I would agree, because it felt like, a little chunky.
Yeah,
to me, I feel like you could have done one and then the other almost.
And maybe this plays into what you were talking about earlier with kind of the love triangle situation there, because that's where the majority of like the action of that subplot like kind of took place.
So, speaking of that, though, I did really like I liked the action of Legolas and Toril fighting the orcs there much more than
in the woods.
The barrel scene earlier. It felt more tangible to me, and I loved the hand-to-hand combat between Legolas and the big
orc. That was some good action.
And I love the, like, whenever he starts, he's bleeding.
He was shocked.
Like, holy crap, I'm bleeding.
Yeah, I am essentially immortal, and I'm bleeding right now.
For sure. You know.
I mean, it's like, and to me, I agree with you. That feels good. But it's like, to me, the part that drug was the dwarves' side of that. Screaming, you know, Keely or whoever, was it Feely or Keely? I'm going to find out here.
Yeah. Find out. Well, like, you know, I just felt like I agree with Jared. Like, we just went back to it too much, and it felt slow because we went back to it so much. Mm. Like, we had all this stuff going on. Like, we would go back to this, and like, this feels slow now.
Yeah. Like, I feel like you could have even shortened that action sequence and knocked it out even before Bilbo went into
do the town and then do Bilbo.
Do the town, shorten that sequence up a little bit, and then go to Bilbo and just do that whole scene.
Yep.
Or whatever.
Yeah, and it was kind of one of those things where the Smaug scene was so strong, so good, and to flash back to something that wasn't quite as strong, that sort of thing, it served to relieve tension that I didn't want relieved yet. I wanted that tension to build until we exploded into flame and wings and scales and, you know, teeth. So.
I loved everything with Smaug. Like, at the end, the battle with him, like, them trying to get away from him, them firing up with the furnaces. Like, I loved all that.
Dude, something
they're just, ticking him off.
Oh,
like,
dude.
That's all it's doing.
That's all they could do at that point. You know, and something that I loved about that element of it, because they had more time, you got to see how, like, vast the dwarf thing was. Because before, we just saw Moria, the Hall of Moria, and we knew that was big, but it's like we got to see not only the treasure room, but we got to kind of go up into, you know, go up into the upper levels and then go back down into the, like, kind of mine area. So I mean, we got to see a large amount of the dwarf universe.
Yeah. In just the universe, you know, we've talked about, you know, the great skill of the dwarves or whatever, and, you know, it's obviously a lot more than just they're just sitting there with pickaxes picking apart a mountain, you know, finding some stones. You know, they've obviously got some awesome contraptions there. You know, they've got some systems going on or whatever. Yeah, so I definitely thought that was cool.
We just sit down there and pan for gold.
That I kind of had to remind myself, okay, this isn't Lord of the Rings. This is kind of a different thing here or whatever. Because at first I was kind of off put by it. Mm. And I was like, oh, all these ropes and pulleys and all this kind of stuff. And then I was like, oh, well, you know.
But it is a mine. And
I was like, yeah, well, maybe
like I said, the only other
cool
mine we saw was Moria. And like the vast size of Moria was reflected here. But it's like we only saw a small portion of Moria.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, it's like I feel like Moria, because it was deteriorated as much as it was, because I mean apparently it was abandoned before this one was.
Also realize that Moria was more of a hiding place. That was a place that was developed after they had lost their kingdom. This is the dwarves' kingdom.
Well, like this is their the mines castle. I hit my microphone again. There was a mine for the Mithril. And in Moria, and then this one was more for like gold and things like that. But also with Moria, didn't they say they were taking it back after they left?
One. Well, remember, like we end up seeing Gimli's.
Right.
Oh, wait, no, Balin's tomb.
Yeah.
There.
They were fighting at Moria at the beginning of the Unexpected Journey when they were telling the story.
But they don't ever take it back.
Like, right.
Yeah.
But it was abandoned long before they left the Lonely Mountain, essentially. Like, it was abandoned to orcs before that. And so it's like
it had to be taken back at some point because that's where
because
Balin died there.
But I literally think, and in fact, if I remember
he
from the books, it happens sometime in between the Hobbit
I don't know. He was buried in a tomb.
That's true. I don't remember.
No, they take it back.
He was Lord of Moria.
They do take it back, but they take it back after this, like in between the two, the books.
Yeah.
So it's like, and so like, basically it was used, abandoned, and so like it's deteriorated more than this one would have. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the structures, my point was that the main structures, whenever they're running away from the Balrog there near the end of the Moria sequence, it looks very similar, like the steps and the ladders and all the different pathways across the big vast mine shaft going straight down was very similar to like the main halls and things like that in this dwarf mountain.
Right. I honestly, like, this is probably the best dragon I've ever seen in a movie.
For sure.
Jeez, yeah. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, and I love it. Like, oh, man.
And his voice, like, whatever they did to his voice just felt good.
Right.
Like, the reverb, I mean, everything, like, just good. Felt good.
He looks
good.
Great.
Oh, my gosh.
And, even with the last few, like, lines where he says, I am death, like, this is pure evil.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, and that was the big
and,
thing.
And knows it. You know, every line that he's always just dripping with, like, he obviously thinks that he can't be killed.
Right.
You know, he's constantly talking about how his claws are swords and his skin is impenetrable and, you know, he breathes fire and he's death. And, like, you know, he's obviously just like, you can't touch me.
Yeah.
I love how the lines that they gave him, that he knows that. And then he also knows that Sauron wants to use him.
Yeah.
Right.
And he serves this purpose because, man, can you imagine Lord of the Rings if he had freaking
dragon?
Oh, man,
it'd be over.
if he had Smaug out there, like, Lord of the Rings would not have turned out the way it did.
Well, the Ringwraiths on the wings were bad enough. Just something that's, you know, 20, 30, 40 times their size. I mean, that's just nuts.
And I think that's a large part of why Gandalf has given so much weight to this journey and has been pushing for it so much. Because he knows that, you know, I feel like the dwarves are pursuing it just for kind of different reasons than Gandalf is helping the dwarves pursue
it.
Right.
You know,
and I think the scene, the
Gandalf
scene,
kind of sees
they
the
don't
bigger,
understand it.
Gandalf
like,
sees
right.
the bigger picture of
right.
it.
The, right. The scene at the Prancing Pony kind of implies that Thorin kind of knows that Gandalf is using him, but he's totally willing to let Gandalf use him, you know, to get what he wants. So,
right.
Okay. So, I mean, was there anything? There's a lot in this movie.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't know. I don't have much else, you know. Like,
that's what I was about to say. I don't think I have a whole lot else either. Was there anything that you guys just blatantly hated about the film?
No.
And obviously, like, and maybe you think the same thing. Was the river sequence kind of like, was that like not okay for you guys?
The river sequence, I mean, I feel like it started off cool.
Yeah.
Until they went through until the dwarves attacked and they went through the gate. That's when it kind of got,
okay.
When Feely kind of, you know, finally pulled the trigger and they went through the gate. That's when it kind of got out of hand to me and, you know, Legolas is jumping on their heads and they're throwing axes between each other and everything. It just got a little bit too much where it was just, it felt like a choreographed scene.
It's almost like the dwarves are like a 12-man buddy cop comedy.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's a good way.
That's
to put
true.
It.
That's a very good way to put it.
That's
you
a
know,
good way
and
of putting it.
I think the only part of that I didn't like, that I wasn't sold on, was whenever I guess it was Bomber was like rolling, like literally for about 45 seconds.
Like
he was rolling
while.
Like ramping off of like
I don't even know where I don't even know where he got the swords that he came busting out of. I don't know if he grabbed
while
those while he was
funny,
while
it's still
he
ridiculous.
Was rolling. Yeah, I don't know if he grabbed them while he was rolling, grabbed these swords, and then he's like, and then I'm gonna.
I feel like that actually like that sequence, like I feel like a lot of the money and time and of the CG went to that sequence because it looked really good. It looked better than like some of the like more believable things
it's like,
that happened.
Spend some time on the orcs running around other than Bomber.
Yeah, because I mean, like, because you could tell that his like his barrel was deteriorating. You could see the minute bolts flying off of it.
I would also
things,
say
so.
About that scene, I don't really just like Bilbo just kind of hanging onto the edge the whole time.
Yeah,
I didn't really
also,
buy that
did,
either.
Like, so his barrel like fell apart, right? And then he jumps into a brand new barrel that's floating
well,
down the river. Where
not,
did that
not,
one
I
come from?
No,
well, I
not,
was also thinking
they
that.
Weren't all full. Like they were whenever they launched them in there were like three of them that
weren't
full.
But they were. But whenever they launched them, they were like holding back for Feely. Like weren't they, or for Bilbo or somebody?
Well, they would have been like I don't know. Like I'm just gonna say like that's just. Whatever, movie
you're,
magic.
You're okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with that one.
third time.
Okay, we did see it in 3D.
Third time.
What did you think of the 3D?
3D, I loved it. I mean, it was really good. You almost forgot that it was in 3D after a certain point. Other than Jared's point, which I know what that's going to be.
I just hate the glasses.
Yeah.
Like, it was a decent visual, you know, whatever. Nothing special to me whatsoever. I still, like, don't really care about it at all. not worth it. Right. I would say, hey, don't ever go see a 3D movie.
Wait, like we saw, the only time I really like to see 3D movies is in IMAX because the glasses aren't tinted as much, and so like it doesn't feel darker. That's the part that bothers me so
plus,
much.
Plus, I mean, the screen is brighter.
I already wear glasses, so right. like it doesn't. Bother
I was about to
me.
Ask you, like, how does wearing them over your glasses?
It works. It looks fine.
Okay,
like as long as my regular glasses aren't smudged or something, it looks great.
Yeah,
but you know, okay, so it was also shot in 48 frames.
We did not see it.
We didn't see it in 48 frames, but you can still tell. Like whenever there are fast motion, like there's no motion blur on these frames because they're cutting them down in half to show that us. And it looks jerky on like motion. Like
well, another thing extent. That I would say about the 3D is if you don't like, and again, it comes down to the glasses, but like unless you're just like, if I ever like turned my head this way, it's like it was blurry
right.
over here.
Right.
It or if you turn,
right.
if you cocked your head this way, you know, it was right. blurry this way.
You can't well, tilt your head.
And that's one you of just the have to sit there and just fully right. focus on it. You know?
Have to commit. I mean, yeah. it's like, and that's one of the reasons why I liked Gravity in 3D, because it forced you to the perspective, like in something that was in space where it's like, you could literally look at this from any angle.
Yeah.
It forced you to the director's perspective, that sort of thing. But in this film, it's like something that's 3 hours long or whatever. You want to like rest yeah. your head on the side or something. Yeah. It's like, and you can't visually look at it that way. So, I mean, yeah. it's like you're stretching your neck muscles every once in a while. So it goes yeah. out of focus.
I will agree with you with Gravity. Like Gravity, like is a movie that was enhanced by the 3D. Mm-hmm. This one, it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah.
You don't need to see 3D.
Here's a bumblebee that's obviously supposed to be coming out of the screen, right. quote unquote. Or right. here's some swords that we stuck in your face that, oh, right. they're sticking right. them in my face. You know, it's just like,
or here's a head that got cut off and it bounces off the camera.
Like
that
honestly,
sort of
recently, like I feel like movie theaters have gotten better about not being gimmicky with the 3D, but I feel like there were several gimmicky moments yeah. in this.
There were?
Yeah.
I mean, is this the first time that Peter Jackson has done 3D?
Something hit the screen. What hit the screen?
The head. Like whenever they cut off the dude's head, it literally just smashes into the camera.
I will, in a few things that I did like about the 3D though, I liked how words popped a little bit more, you know, all the subtitles.
Like
you
the
know,
subtitles were closer?
Not even just closer.
You just noticed them more.
Yeah, they just I think just popped is just the best word that I can use.
Pop, pop,
you know,
pop.
And same with the title of the movie, you know, when it said Desolation of Smog, you know, it just seemed more... Yeah. Just kind of
tangible,
there.
as opposed to you're watching it. It felt more like it was
for sure.
It was more real, yeah. you know.
And that I liked.
So yeah. Essentially, if you're going to see a movie with subtitles, go see it in 3D.
All your foreign films, 3D.
okay, so do you guys want to give this like a good rating?
Yeah,
like, and how do you want to do this? Do you want to do it like just a rating, or do you want to give
overall
it
overall rating?
Okay, overall rating. I like it.
All right. So, Jared,
do you want to go first?
Well, I mean, the ratings are hard, especially with these films, you know, because
the nostalgia side kicks in.
Well, the nostalgia side, because and just the fact that they're so, you know, mixed with me. I will say, definitely a vast improvement on the first one, or whatever is, you know, there were far less complaints to this one than there was in the first.
So, what
one.
Would you have given the first one?
The first one, you know, now, and also I feel like it's very hard to rate a movie after the first time you've seen it.
That's true.
You know, I feel like in order to give a movie a true rating, you have to see it a couple times because I feel like you can easily fall into the category of new is always better.
I mean, I can see that, but then again, it's like I really disliked
my rating after the first one would not have changed after seeing it.
Like,
times.
But I mean, it went up for me just because yeah. it's like
that's,
because
but that's
it,
fine,
you know, that sort of thing.
But we're not in that moment right now. We have to
anyway,
rate it right now.
I would probably put The Unexpected Journey at something like a solid, I mean, 6.87. Something like that or whatever.
Right.
But again, it's like it's a hard rating because there are things about the movie that I extremely like
yeah.
or whatever, but it is incredibly imbalanced by those things that yeah. take you out of it.
Okay,
this
so this
one I would definitely say much better. I would probably, again, it's a balanced rating because, again, there are things that are really, really, really like 10.0 ratings about it or whatever, then that are dragged down by these, you know, fives and stuff like that or whatever. So I would probably put it at 7.5.
Okay, Chris?
I would give the first one
yeah.
like a 7.5. Like that's probably what I would have given it then. That's why I give it now. And then this one I give it a 9. Like for okay. me, the fun factor and just like how much better this was, like make this a better film. Like mm-hmm. I will probably pop this one in and watch it. I will probably never watch the first one again. Like if I want to just sit down and watch a Hobbit movie, not starting with the other one. Maybe if I decide to do a marathon, but like if I want to watch one of them, I'm going to watch this one.
I could see your point there, where it's like if you watch the original Hobbit, like The Unexpected Journey.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to watch that one just by itself. I would want to watch it and then go right into this one.
I think we have the extended versions. I think we need the shortened versions as well.
I agree.
I think we could do like the hour version of The Hobbit. Here's what it is. You got the Shire, Meeting of the Dwarves. You go instantly to Rivendell, mainly highlighting the scene with Saruman and Gandalf and Galadriel. Yep. Then you go straight to the scene with Gollum.
That's something I wanted to mention, but yeah.
And then you go out. Then that's the end of the movie. That's really all you need in that film.
That is all you need.
In my opinion. It's the Shire, the meeting with Gandalf and all that.
Rivendell.
The Gollum. And then just the pointer scene to Bilbo committing to the
Journey. Could just edit our own. Like, let's just go get the footage. I'll edit it. For
sure.
I can make that movie an hour and it'd be awesome.
What's really funny to me is like on this one as well. And then it'd be like a 9.0 movie. There are huge segments. There are huge segments of this film and it could just be just flat out cut. Like a lot of the like running around in the first 30 minutes of this film, it's like you could cut that down to like 10 minutes. It's like because we're running across one field and then it's like we go from that field into another field and we're still running, you know, and it's like, man, there was a lot of
the orcs are hot on our tail in this one.
And it's like, and it's like to me that some of that can be cut because that traveling time. Mm-hmm. Then there were also some of the like similar shots, like whenever we ended up at Mirkwood. There's a similar shot to the way we dealt with Fangorn back in the day, where it's literally the same shot. It's a mirror image of the same shot, and where it pans in and it goes into the trees. But it's like to me those things can be kind of cut. You can cut out some of those things that are like. I understand Mirkwood is a crazy place. Yeah. Let's get inside of it and find out it's a crazy place.
Yeah, some of the traveling stuff, like, and Peter Jackson loves his traveling shots in any movie.
Yeah. For sure. It would be interesting, though, to
even in King
to
Kong,
have like a shortened version of these films and see if they could be made, you know, more entertaining to some extent.
More tightly plotted, that sort of thing.
More tightly plotted.
I mean, the only thing that you would lose there is some of the dialogue because he spreads out his dialogue, his meaningful dialogue, from one location to the next, that sort of thing. So, you know.
So what do you give this?
Did you give this one a good rating?
I gave it a 9.
Okay. So we all gave our Unexpected Journey. Unexpected Journey, after watching it now today, I would give it an 8. Before, I would have given it about a 5. I'm not going to lie. The first time I saw it, I probably would have been like, this is a 5. You know, I was just shocked by how.
That's
how
why I'm saying it's hard to give it, hard to give a movie it. Review after.
But
the
then
first
it's
time
like, but then
movie.
This time I would say after watching it and understanding that it's not a film in and of itself. It's essentially the first third of a film. It's act one in any film. 3 hours of act one, but you know.
So what
whatever.
Do you give this one?
This one, I give this one a. I'm right there with you, 9. Cool. It was really good.
Like, and really a good. Large part of mine factors in just the fun factor and how much I love this world.
Yeah.
And I think that this one really did it justice.
Well, of course, you can't separate that out. And it's like, and I love the dwarves and I love the Hobbit book as well. And this film captured the way that book played for me. Like, even the only thing that really, like, cheesed me out was the rolling barrel with Bomber.
Right.
That was the only thing that I was just like, I can't deal with that.
But it's a really solid
movie. It's a great film. Great film.
All right. So, that was our review of The Hobbit,
The Desolation of Smaug.
You can find us all on Twitter. Jared is...
JPinions.
At JPinions. You are...
JohnWright777.
At JohnWright77. And I'm at ChrisWright250. Thanks to David Wilkinson for that insight earlier that we shared. And I think next week we're going to have a special Christmas episode for you.
Christmas episode.
Yep. And then after that, we'll have our favorites of 2013.
Best of 2013.
Just the best... anything? Just the best.
It's the best in entertainment, probably.
Yes.
Best in entertainment.
Just your best. Your best moments.
Pair of pants I've had on in
the
best
moments of 2013. Best taco I ate this year. The one that didn't make me use the restroom afterwards.
The best handshake.
Exactly. Yes. But yeah.
Best
so
conversation.
That'll be 2 weeks from now. But yeah. So it was great having you on, Jared.
Yes.
Thanks for having me. Always great.
Thank you. It's really awesome to have your return. We'll have you
back
again.
The epic return.
Yeah, the epic return.
What's coming up next? What's the next one?
I don't know. Like sometime in January, we'll have to have the next movie. Review.
We probably will start. We could do some like post movie reviews because like Wolf of Wall Street comes out. I really want to review that.
Yeah,
but that comes out on Christmas. Really I'm that not doing great. A podcast on Christmas Day. So
come on, man.
Yeah, we can do some stuff in January and do some post podcast. Especially we're getting into like Oscar season and stuff like that. Yeah. So we should take some of the best ones.
We should take some of the Oscar nominations as well, and maybe talk about those.
Be a turn, you know, from you know. I feel like you know we do a lot of you know the superhero fantasy, you know, that kind of stuff. But it would be a turn to do more of just like good quality, just like films, you know, that are like Oscar contenders and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Well, so looks like we have a lot coming up. Stay tuned to this podcast, and we'll see you next time on
Stay on Target.